Well, good afternoon. Boy, that's lively. Thank you very much for hosting us at this beautiful law school, this outstanding law school. It's a great pleasure to be here. And I would now like to call the case of United States v. Irizarry. Counsel for the appellant.
Chief Judge Baker, and may it please the court. This case is about a governmental intrusion into a private residence. As the Supreme Court said in Peyton versus New York, there can be no doubt that William Pitt's address in the House of Commons in 1761 echoed and re-echoed throughout the colonies. The poorest man may in his cottage bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. It may be frail. Its roof may shake. The wind may blow through it. The storm may enter. The rain may enter. But the King of England cannot enter. All his force dares not cross the threshold of the ruined tenement. Well, similarly, even if a landlord can enter a residence for certain limited purposes, does not authorize a governmental representative, a governmental agent, to cross that threshold. Airman First Class Irizarry and his wife rented an apartment, an off-base residence in Abilene, Texas. A1C Irizarry fell into arrears with his rent. Afterwards, an employee of the apartment's management company went into the apartment to perform a skip check. And when he did so, he found the apartment in a state of disorder, including with animal feces on the floor. The apartment management company then contacted A1C Irizarry's unit and spoke with his NCOs over a week-long period on several times. And they spoke to both appellant's first sergeant, Master Sergeant Sigansky, and his shop chief, Technical Sergeant Zenner. Finally, after these calls had gone on for about a week, Master Sergeant Sigansky agreed to go out to the apartment, and he took Technical Sergeant Zenner with him.
This was decided at the lower court based on this concept of being in the shoes of the landlord?
Yes, Your Honor.
How are you going to tell this case should be decided? What principle of law, other than the thing about the King of England?
Your Honor, the principle of law is that in a warrantless intrusion by government agents into a private residence is presumptively impermissible. And in this instance, there was neither any actual authority on behalf of the landlord to allow entry and no apparent authority on behalf of the
counsel, if in fact they step into the shoes of the landlord and if in fact the landlord was permissibly there under the terms of the lease, is it an intrusion? I mean, how is it an intrusion?
Well, yes, Your Honor. The Fourth Amendment doesn't govern what a landlord can do. It governs what government agents can do. So let's hypothesize that I have a house cleaning contract with a house cleaning service. Just because I've authorized the house cleaning service to come into my house for limited purposes doesn't mean that they can either, one, invite a government agent along to do so as well, or two, that the government could surreptitiously have one of its agents be hired as a house cleaner to come into my house to gain information that they otherwise couldn't. So if we imagine a situation, say, where there's a state with a private property tax, and the government can't insert somebody into that house to gather information under the guise that they're doing so in the shoes of the cleaning service.
Do you buy the in the shoes of the landlord doctrine concept?
No, Your Honor. In fact, that's inconsistent.
Are you accepting it as a principle of law?
No, Your Honor. It's inconsistent with the Supreme Court's approach in cases like Stoner versus California, most relevantly for this case, Chapman versus United States. Those cases have said that just because there's a limited right of entry into one person does not authorize a government agent to go in and see what that person could see in their limited...
Well, what about an actual repairman?
Your Honor?
What if there had been an actual repairman?
Your Honor, the actual repairman can see...
Would you then say that in the shoes of the landlord is a correct principle of law to apply?
Well,
putting aside
Your Honor,
the facts of this case, I'm trying to figure out whether it's the concept that is off or the facts that are off.
Your Honor, it's the concept that's off because... If it's the handyman that enters the apartment, there's no Fourth Amendment action because the handyman is not a governmental actor. But the answer to the question who can authorize a governmental intrusion into this house is not the handyman can. Once the apartment invited the master sergeants over, the master sergeant and NCO over, when they entered the apartment, it was a governmental entrance into a private property for the purpose of gathering information.
Is this a search?
Yes, Your Honor.
How is it a search? How is this a search at all?
Your Honor,
it's a seizure. I grant you it's a seizure. They went in there for a purpose totally unrelated with no search in mind. They went in, I mean, if he were charged under 134 with service discrediting conduct by trashing the apartment, then I could see your point. That's not this case. These guys aren't law enforcement. They go in there with two purposes in mind, to check out the apartment and see if the landlord's telling the truth, and to help the guy out. And in the process of doing that, they come upon what amounts to contraband in plain view, which they seize. But I don't see where this is even a search in the constitutional dimension.
Your Honor, first I'll mention it, the AVVI, the altitude vertical velocity indicator, was not in plain view. And the military judge actually made a finding of that.
It was not in plain view?
Correct, Your Honor.
It was lying on the floor partially covered by an article of clothing.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And if you
did they move the article of clothing to see it?
Not only did they move the article of clothing to see it, as the military judge found in his findings of fact at Joint Appendix 215, but if you look at Master Sergeant...
Was it not partially exposed?
It was partially exposed, Your Honor, but it was interesting because what Master Sergeant Sagansky said in his written statement was that he saw something on the ground that looked like an aircraft part, and then he had it photographed, then he moved the cloth on it, and then he picked it up to see whether it was government property. He said that. He picked it up to see whether it was government property. So
there was enough exposed to where they could tell it looked like an aircraft part.
Look like an aircraft part, yes,
right. Right. There was enough in plain view that they could tell it was a reasonable indication it was an aircraft part.
Yes, Your Honor, but okay. He then took a step beyond, he took multiple steps beyond that when
He seized it.
Well, he moved the cloth before he knew that it was government property, Your Honor, and then according to his own statement, he picked it up to look at the serial number, and he turned around to look at the serial number before he knew it was government property, Your Honor. In fact, that was to discern that it was government property. So when he was in the apartment with Mr. Marquette, he was exceeding the scope of the reason that he was in there when he began to investigate this apparent...
Wait a minute. He's in there to look at crap on the floor.
Yes, Your Honor.
He's looking at crap on the floor.
Well, Your Honor, what happened was they went into the apartment. First, they went into the living room. Then they saw the kitchen, and the kitchen is where the animal feces were. And then they went past a bathroom and then into the bedroom. And so he's there in the place that deserves the most Fourth Amendment protection, a marital bedroom. He's already past the place where the animal feces are on the floor, Your Honor.
Counsel, more importantly, is there anything in the findings of fact that suggests in any way that when the command representatives entered this apartment that they did so for an investigative or law enforcement purpose?
For an investigative purpose, yes, Your Honor. They were there to gather information.
I think you understand. When I say investigative, I mean a related to an investigation, as in a criminal investigation with the suspicion that criminal activity was afoot.
Well, Your Honor, they testified they did not have that subjective intent. But objectively, they would have known that based on the information they'd received, there was a potential 109 violation and there was a potential 134 violation, Your Honor.
But in terms of the findings of fact, is there something in the findings of fact that supports that says anywhere that they were going in there because they believed that criminal activity was afoot or that they had a criminal investigative purpose in mind?
No, Your Honor. No,
so
Your Honor.
Are you suggesting then that that we need to overrule Jacobs?
Your Honor, this case is entirely distinguishable from Jacobs.
Well, can you answer that question? Is it your view that Jacobs should be overruled?
It's our view, Your Honor, that the better view in Jacobs was Chief Judge Everett's dissent.
And just to clarify, in terms of Chapman and Stoner that you're relying on, is there any instance that you can tell me about where those cases have been used in a situation where the additional person led into a hotel room or an apartment went in there for a command? Sort of, I guess, assistance sort of purpose as opposed to a law enforcement purpose.
No, Your Honor. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
In this case of fortiori the other way from Jacobs, Jacobs at least involved a cop. These guys aren't cops.
Your Honor, Jacobs was a staff sergeant.
I'm sorry?
Jacobs was an NCO, Your Honor.
Jacobs was a security policeman, was he? The person in the let into the apartment in Jacobs was a law enforcement person, albeit not for a law enforcement purpose.
Yes, Your Honor, but the... It was
here
the,
you've got two guys who are neither enforcement personnel nor admitted for a law enforcement purpose.
Well, Your Honor, it was happenstance that the NCO in Jacobs was law enforcement.
True.
Because Jacobs was law enforcement. So he was there because he was a supervisor.
Right.
But every NCO, Your Honor, has a law enforcement function. Every NCO does. But the more important point, Your Honor...
Are you suggesting every time an NCO looks at anything, he's conducting a search?
No, Your Honor. But when an NCO... To get back to Your Honor's previous question about whether this was a search. In United States versus Jones, the case about putting the GPS on the car, the Supreme Court says that... That essentially a trespass that is for the purpose of gathering information is a search. And so in this case, when Master Sergeant Sagansky was asked why he went to the apartment, his answer was to gather information.
Can I ask you to focus that on a second? The military judge indicated in the findings that the purpose was to effectuate repairs. The government has argued that. You've argued obviously something else. Can you please sort through the record for us? And with precision, cite to us those passages which in your view, indicate what the purpose was.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact,
and then having determined that, tell us how the law applies to that purpose.
Your Honor, the military judge's findings that that the entry was motivated for purposes of repair were clearly erroneous. In fact, the military judge repeatedly said, for example, at page 212 of the joint appendix, he said, He said that Mr. Marquette had allowed the entry for the purpose of obtaining repairs. If this court were to look at Mr. Marquette's testimony, he does not use the word repair even once. The military judge three times found that Mr. Marquette called the NCOs and had the NCOs over for the purpose of effectuating repairs. He didn't use the word repair once. He said that his reason was to get the apartment cleaned and to get the rent.
Counsel, I want to move back a little bit to the expectation of privacy. And under the lease itself, obviously, the landlord had a limited right of entry. But under that paragraph 28, it also says that repairers, servicers, contractors are allowed in, even if they're not there, as long as they post notice that they were in. What kind of an expectation of privacy is there when a person contractually says, all of these people can come in when I'm not there?
Your Honor, the paragraph 28 expressly says when government representatives can enter. And it says that the landlord is allowed to authorize government representatives to enter the apartment for the limited purposes of ensuring compliance with safety and housing ordinances.
So you're making a distinction between whether or not non-governmental agents can come in. There isn't an expectation of privacy for repairers, servicers, what have you, but there is for government.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, it's the distinction that I began with, Your Honor. Just because you allow a contractual house cleaning service into your apartment or house doesn't mean that you are authorizing government representatives to come in. Doesn't mean you're authorizing tax agents to come in to see whether you're living beyond your means as declared on your tax returns. Doesn't authorize tax agents to come in for purposes of personal property taxes.
And why doesn't it make a difference that these individuals, the two sergeants, we're really not going in for any type of law enforcement purpose? I mean, that's clear from the record.
Well again, Your Honor, A1C Irizarry and his wife were
in track. Why don't you finish answering my question and then go back to that? Because you never established in the record, what the purpose was.
Yes, Your Honor.
That was my question, which you didn't answer.
Mr. Marquette testified that his purpose of inviting them over was to get the apartment clean and to collect the rent.
But cite to particular record pages rather than argument. Don't argue it. Demonstrate it, please.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then return to Judge Erdman's question once you've made your argument about the facts on purpose.
I believe it's on page 165 of the joint appendix, Your Honor. But in fact, Mr. Marquette testified on three points during Mr. Marquette's testimony. He testified that the purpose for having the master sergeants over was to clean the apartment. And again, his entire testimony is a testimony that goes from page 164 of the record, I believe, to page 170 of the record. At no point does he use the word repair.
But I mean, if not to quibble over language, but if the problem with the apartment is that it was filthy, dirty, and had feces in it, how is cleaning that not putting it from a state of disrepair into a state of repair?
Well, Your Honor, the contract uses the phrase make repairs. And so the question is, was the entry authorized for that purpose? And it's also important to note, Your Honor, that both Technical Sergeant Zenner and Master Sergeant Sagansky, they both testified they had no intention to make repairs. They had no intention to estimate the cost of making repairs. That was not their purpose for being there. They were there.
What was their purpose, please?
Your Honor, they were there to gather information and to report back to the commander. And then
where is that established in the record so that you can make sure that we're reviewing what it is you think the record reflects?
Your Honor, they...
And is it their purpose or is it Mr. Marquette's purpose that's most relevant?
Your Honor, the most relevant purpose is the purpose for which the NCOs entered. And again, Master Sergeant Sagansky expressly testified about his purpose for entering the apartment, and he said that his purpose for entering the apartment was to gather information, and before going to the apartment, he discussed it with the commander, and he was going to report back to the commander, and he was going to potentially counsel the appellant. And he also testified that he'd received repeated calls from the management company, and one of his reasons for going was essentially to mollify a homeowner, a landlord in the community, Your Honor. But again, we get back to the question of when the Fourth Amendment applies. And the Fourth Amendment applies when a governmental actor goes into a place where there's a reasonable expectation of privacy. And here, the entry was into the marital bedroom of a leased apartment. It would be hard to have a place with a greater expectation of privacy. And that entry was for the purpose of gathering information. And United States versus Jones tells us that governmental intrusion into a private area for the purpose of gathering information is a search.
Counsel, let's assume you're right in all of these arguments and that there was a Fourth Amendment violation and that they shouldn't have been there. Why should the exclusionary rule apply in this case when the Supreme Court has said that it's designed primarily to deter illegal conduct on the part of police? And just recently they said that it applies only to reckless, deliberate, or grossly negligent conduct. And would you categorize the conduct of the sergeants in this case as reckless, deliberate, or grossly negligent?
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Judge Baker, I see my time is about to expire. If I could have leave to answer the question. Thank
you. Of course. You, thank you very much.
Your Honor, Judge Urban, the issue is if we allow an intrusion by NCOs into an off-base apartment, off-base marital apartment, this court would be authorizing a substantial intrusion by government into the liberty interest of service members. And the failure to apply the exclusionary rule in this context would actually encourage this sort of intrusion into protected areas.
But the standard that they've given is reckless, deliberate, or grossly negligent conduct. And I'm trying to figure out whether the conduct of these two sergeants in this case was reckless, deliberate, or grossly negligent.
Well, yes, Your Honor. In fact, Technical Sergeant Zenner testifies at Joint Appendix at 151 that he wasn't even sure whether they had the authority to go into the apartment, and he did it anyway, Your Honor.
And what is that, grossly negligent?
That it's reckless, Your Honor. He had qualms about whether it was permissible to go into this, to invade the appellant's liberty, to invade his liberty interest, to invade his privacy, and he does it anyway. Again, the Fourth Amendment protection is designed to prevent...
How is relying on the apparent authority of the landlord reckless?
Well, Your Honor, the landlord...
Leaving aside the question of actual authority.
Yes, Your Honor, the landlord didn't have apparent authority over the apartment. The landlord had an apparent limited right of entry. And it would...
Are you asking an NCO in the execution of this kind of activity to make that kind of distinction?
Your Honor, I'm asking this court to give that distinction to the NCOs. I'm asking this court to say to an NCO, if you're in a situation like this, just as Illinois versus Rodriguez says, if it isn't a situation where there's apparent common authority, the right thing to do is gather more information. They never asked to see the lease, Your Honor. Had they asked to see the lease, they would have seen that there actually was a limitation on the landlord's authority to allow government representatives into the apartment, and this didn't fall within that limitation, Your Honor. They didn't talk to Airman First Class Irizarry before they entered the apartment. They didn't talk to Airman First Class Irizarry's wife before they entered the apartment. They entered the apartment and invaded his private space that is entitled to the greatest Fourth Amendment.
As I recall, Irizarry wasn't reachable.
Okay, counsel, you are over time, but there are still questions, and in light of the fact that Amicus is arguing in favor of the government's position, you certainly should take the time to answer the questions. Judge Cox, you have a question.
No, I was just going to ask if the adjective intentional would be added to the three that Judge Erdman asked you about, reckless and so forth. So if you intentionally go in, that would be another category, wouldn't it?
Yes, Judge Cox, yes.
I have one more question. NCOs are supposed to look out for the morale and welfare of their troops, are they not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any point in your view or any factual pattern in your view where it would be appropriate for the landlord to let them in furtherance of their responsibility as troop leaders?
Of course, Your Honor. Of course. If there were someone that was injured inside, that would be both appropriate in
outside an emergency context, would there be such a circumstance?
Yes, Your Honor.
What might that be?
If there were a situation where there was somebody with suicidal ideations in the apartment,
wouldn't that be emergency? Is there a non-emergency basis predicated on morale and welfare or good order and discipline that should give rise to a senior NCO going into this apartment or an apartment?
Once again, yes, Your Honor, because again, what defines this intrusion as a Fourth Amendment incident was the quest for information. So if there's an intrusion that is not for an information gathering purpose, then the Fourth Amendment would not provide that limitation on the entry, Your Honor. There may be other limitations.
But when the request for information, their stated purpose for the request for information was to look out for this individual and to make sure that whatever damages were being alleged to the apartment were memorialized and in fact true, how is that an information gaining in a negative sense?
Well, Judge Ryan, that was a portion of their explanation, but it wasn't the entirety of it. Technical Sergeant Zenner also said that he was there, for example, he brought his camera for administrative purposes, implying that there might be some sort of command, coercive response to this situation. It would be easy to imagine a situation where this could result in NJP, where this could result in an adverse counseling entry in somebody's SRB, where this could result in a diminution in their OER, it would be EPR.
Is the motive of the government agents a player at all in this analysis? Do we pay any attention to what they really were going in for?
Well, that is relevant, Your Honor. And again, the fact that Master Sergeant Sagansky he testified his purpose was to gather information. He used the word information, Your Honor.
Partially to gather information.
Well, Your Honor, that when he was
and partially to protect the service member.
That was one of several rationales. But when the government intrudes on a private space for the purpose of gathering information, that is exactly what the Fourth Amendment is designed to protect against. It gets back to cases like Stoner versus Chapman. Just because the hotel...
I'm going to recommend that we allow government counsel to argue. And then if on rebuttal you need additional time and their questions, you'll have it.
Thank you.
Judge Baker, honorable members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Lauren DiDomenico, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Taylor Smith, we represent the government in this matter.
Counsel, could you speak up a little?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
This court should not reverse the ruling because the military judge's findings of fact were not clearly erroneous, nor was the decision based on erroneous view of the law. The military judge, after making extensive findings of fact and conclusions of law, did not abuse his discretion in denying the defense's motion to suppress the non-commissioned officer's entry into appellant's apartment.
Can you demonstrate with reference to the record as to why it was the purpose of the senior NCOs to effectuate repairs in the apartment when they went there?
Yes. On Joint Appendix page 103, 107, and 108, the first sergeant said the reason he went there was to assess the damage and that he did, in fact, inspect the damage.
To assess the damage for the purpose of reporting it back to your commander? Was that not what the full answer was?
On Joint Appendix 147, he mentioned that it could have rise to the level of an administrative action or a counseling, but that's not a criminal action. That's not a criminal It's not preferring charges.
Well, I'm not focusing on that yet. I'm just trying to figure out whether the purpose was to effectuate repairs.
The purpose was to facilitate and facilitate repairs and estimate damage. On page Joint Appendix 114.
How is reporting back to your commander facilitating repairs?
They were going to assist the landlord in resolving the situation, in remedying the situation, so that the landlord would not take the appellant to eviction in civil court. And so there was no indication that they had any intent to prefer charges against the appellant for anything that he was doing. It was merely to show the civilian community that the Air Force cares and to resolve and remedy the situation without taking the appellant to.
What of the testimony about service discredit?
Repeat that one more time, sir.
The two sergeants were asked whether they thought that failing to pay rent could reflect discredit upon the Air Force.
They did say that it could, but that was not their purpose for entering at the time. And the first cert actually said, I don't know if he dishonorably failed to pay because I don't know the situation or why he didn't pay. So their purpose was not in any way related to any criminal action or to search.
Actually, counsel, he denied that was the reason he went, didn't he, on page 105? He was asked, and Airman Irizarry had dishonorably failed rent, and he said, I don't know.
Right, he said, yes, Your Honor, he said, I don't know if he dishonorably paid because he has no.
And he certainly denied he was going to effect any repair.
They weren't there to actually make the repairs. No.
What does effectuate repairs mean? There's nothing in the lease that talks about entry for effectuating repairs. It allows you into to repair or to estimate repairs. What we're looking at here is the terms of the lease that gives them the limited access.
The government would argue that to the extent the lease gives the landlord the right to enter, it is reasonably contemplated that the landlord could consent to a third party to enter within the scope of what the landlord has the right to do.
And where does it say that the landlord can come in to effectuate repairs? It says the landlord can come in to repair, or repairers can come in to repair.
Well, on Joint Appendix page 54, 28, paragraph 28, paragraph 2 of the lease, the landlord may enter to make repairs or replacements, estimate repair costs, remove health and safety hazards. And paragraph 13 of the lease says that the landlord is allowed to enter when the rent is delinquent. And in this case...
Allowed to enter when? I didn't hear you.
Just a little louder, please.
And please a little slower.
Sure. On paragraph 13 of the lease, the landlord may enter when a tenant's rent is delinquent.
But isn't that when a lien has been filed? Isn't there a requirement that the lien be filed first? Under the actual language of that paragraph?
The government would argue no. Under the language of the paragraph, under the language of paragraph 13, it says, if your rent is delinquent, our representative may peacefully enter the apartment. And the second half of the sentence is they may remove and or store all property subject to lien. So at what point does a landlord lose his ability to enter an apartment? If a tenant doesn't pay his rent for 2, 3, 4 months, why can't the landlord enter and find out why?
Counsel, going back to Mr. Sullivan's basic argument, do you agree or disagree that the two sergeants that entered the apartment were agents of the United States of America?
I agree that they were.
Would it make any difference if they were FBI agents or OSI agents, if they were going in there for exactly the same purpose you argue they went in for?
No, if they went in for the purpose that the landlord is allowed to do under the lease, then it should make no difference.
Do you agree with the premise that they went in there to investigate the conduct of an airman in the United States Air Force?
I don't believe they went in to investigate the misconduct.
I didn't use the word misconduct. It's the conduct.
I believe they went there to assist the landlord in estimating the damage so they could remedy the situation.
Does that mean that if the landlord had a problem with another apartment, that he'd call these sergeants out again? Civilians in the apartment, same thing. They're the guys you call if you need assistance with repairing an apartment?
No, Your Honor. I believe that in Jacobs, when this court rightfully decided Jacobs and correctly did so, that they recognize that this case is unique in a military context because of the relationship between a military member and his supervisor and his first sergeant. And because this case is unique in a military context, and Jacobs recognized that, that Chapman and its progeny, Chapman and Stoner, are
distinct. Can I ask you about that? Is this case, do you think this is a in the shoes of the landlord case? Or is the government here to argue that there's something about being a senior NCO or a first sergeant that is distinct from whatever the lease says? Is this all about the lease and we should worry about what shoes look like, or is this something about something else?
I believe it's partially both. I believe this is exactly what the case is exactly like Jacobs and basically in all of the facts. In that case, the landlord entered the apartment to make emergency plumbing repairs and found the damage to the apartment.
Wouldn't we be more intellectually honest if the court decided that this was an official investigation into the conduct of PFC, or whatever his rank is, Airman Irizarry? But under the Supreme Court doctrine, there was no recklessness, no disregard, there was no intention to violate his rights or anything else. They were in good faith, thinking they had the right to go in there, thinking they were doing it in Irizarry's best interest, and not try to draw the line and say this is not a search or this is authorized by the landlord or anything else. Isn't that your apparent authority argument?
Yes, Your Honor, that they believed that the landlord had the authority to let them in.
And so why should we deter this kind of conduct in the future when we've got a commander out there with one of his troops causing problems in the community and he sends a couple of NCOs down to check it out?
If this court were to repudiate Jacobs, that would stifle the ability of the first sergeant and the supervisor to take care of the mental health and fitness of their troops.
So that's only if it entirely depends on the shoes of the landlord argument.
The Fourth Amendment analysis is not based solely on the complexities and technicalities of contract and property law. You also must consider the factors that the landlord had a sufficient relationship to the premises to authorize consent. And in Jacobs, this court stated the same degree of common authority as defined in Matlock by the Supreme Court is not required when government officials enter the apartment in the shoes.
What determines whether the landlord has X amount of authority or X plus 10. Isn't it the lease?
It's the lease and the reasonable expectation of privacy. So,
counsel, would this be a different case if the command representatives that entered the apartment didn't know that the landlord had entered it multiple times already?
They did, Your Honor. And the reason their belief is reasonable is because they knew that appellant had failed to pay his rent for 2 months, that he had damaged the apartment extensively. They also knew that the landlord had entered the apartment previously. They knew the landlord intended to post an abandonment sign. Neither of them were law enforcement officers or acting in a law enforcement capacity. And it's important to note that Jacobs was the law at the time that the landlords or the NCOs entered the apartment. And so if the lease permitted the landlord to enter and they entered in the shoes of the landlord, they were complying lawfully with this court's decision in Jacobs.
Is this plain view? Why or why not?
It is plain view.
Why?
They saw the equipment on the floor. They were walking around the apartment looking for damage, which is within the scope of the landlord's rights under the contract or under the lease to observe the damage. And they were doing just what the landlord within the scope of the landlord's rights. And they saw the equipment on the ground. It's a B1 AVII, which is not something someone would normally have in their apartment. Appellant's job was to remove disabled AVIIs and replace them. And they saw it on the ground. The first shirt testified on page 77 that he took a picture of the AVII without having to move a shirt from the B1, B1 equipment. So you could see it plainly.
Well, doesn't that, then he picked it up and looked, he took a picture of it. Then he picked it up and looked at the serial number. Doesn't this kind of edge over into Chief Judge Everett's description of the policeman bending himself in various bizarre ways to get the serial number without touching it?
No, Your Honor, I think this is this is different. This is not like it's a radio, a stereo equipment that would be found anywhere. This is a B1 equipment that was missing from the shop, and they recognized it was missing from the shop. It's not something that a normal person...
Well, whether it was missing from... whether they knew it was the one that was missing from the shop or not, isn't the presence of something like that basically contraband?
Yes.
Whether it's that particular AVVI or just any AVVI.
Yes, sir. But it does help that they recognized it immediately as one missing from the shop that they had spent many man hours searching for prior to this event. The government does want to point out that the NCO's entry was not a violation of the Fourth Amendment under the common law trespass test as discussed in Jones by the appellant. One, because there was no trespass, as I've discussed, that it was proper under the lease and under this court's decision in Jacobs. And second, that criminal trespass alone is not enough to be a Fourth Amendment violation. The Supreme Court said in Jones that to be a trespass under the common law trespass test, the trespass must be conjoined with something that wasn't present here, and that's an attempt to find evidence of a crime. And this court should find that the military judge was not erroneous in finding the entry was lawful under Jacobs, based on several factors, including the reasonable expectation of privacy and the common law trespass test, considering appellant's failure to pay his rent for 2 months, the damage he made to the apartment, and considering the purpose of the NCO's entry was to facilitate arranging payment and making repairs and to protect the appellant without an eye for criminal action.
Counsel, just to put a little tiny different spin on the facts, and I understand this isn't it, but what if the sergeant had said, I am missing this device, and I bet you Irizarry might have it at his house, but I don't have probable cause to go get a warrant under the Fourth Amendment. But I wonder if the landlord has authority to let me in to inspect for damage and animal stuff and all of that kind of thing. Would this be a violation of the Fourth Amendment?
That would be, Your Honor, under Chapman.
But the authority is of the landlord to let him in is the same, right?
But the court in Jacobs specifically distinguished Chapman for that very reason, that in Chapman, the police entered specifically for searching for evidence of an illegal distillery, and it was evidence of a crime. And that's why they went to the landlord and asked for the landlord to let them in. In this case, the NCOs entered at the behest of the landlord to assist the landlord in something the landlord was allowed to do legally under the lease. And so Chapman and Stoner and those progeny cases are specifically distinguishable from the case here.
Counsel, has this stand in the shoes of doctrine? Has that found support in any other federal or state courts, to your knowledge?
Your Honor, I don't believe you will find an equivalent civilian federal case, and that's because, as I discussed, this is unique in a military context. You won't find a civilian employer who is involved in the mental health and physical fitness of their employees. And so in this case...
So this is a military unique exception?
At this point, the government would say it is unique in this scenario because... unless you could find a civilian type environment where someone would want to invite someone in to do this kind of inspection.
The footnote in Jacobs, though, is to civilian cases, is it not? The footnote after in the shoes of the landlord?
Oh, they are. There are Ninth Circuit cases that do, like Sledge.
Have they ever been overruled?
No, Your Honor.
So the Sledge case is still good law in the Ninth Circuit?
I believe so on that issue.
I mean, that's the case that Judge Sullivan relied on, wasn't it? United States, maybe the Matlock case, I guess. One of those cases.
Yes, under those, and there are Texas cases, for instance, Salpas v. State, where the storage unit was agreement allowed reentry upon default, and the lease also prohibited storage of contraband. And the court found the owner's consent to police entry was reasonable contemplation of the contract, of the parties to the contract.
If you were not to use the phrase in the shoes of the landlord, but articulate the legal principle upon which these senior staff NCOs entered the apartment. How would you articulate that? Or alternatively, perhaps, is the government's case entirely dependent on this court affirming the concept of in the shoes of the landlord as the Fourth Amendment principle of law?
Your Honor, the government would say that it's not based solely on in the shoes of the landlord, but that the landlord had sufficient relationship to the premises to authorize consent to search or consent to entry. Under Matlock, because Matlock allowed for common authority or a sufficient relationship to the premises. And we would say that the landlord had a sufficient relationship to the premises based on the lease, based on the fact that the appellant had not paid his rent in default on the lease, that he had damaged the apartment in violation of the lease, and based on those factors, Matlock would apply, and the landlord did have sufficient authority over the premises to authorize consent.
Well, you know, even if the landlord didn't, even if it was a trespass, it was a trespass by the landlord. If the landlord acted in good faith and the NCOs acted in good faith on the representation of the landlord, does it matter?
No, Your Honor, it does not matter because under the trespass, to be a straight violation on a technical trespass under the Fourth Amendment, they would need to be searching for evidence of a crime and gathering information on a lease, on an issue of damaging the apartment without any eye for criminal action.
Well, isn't the real answer the point made by Judge Cox that this isn't the kind of conduct you're trying to deter? So therefore, why keep it out?
Could you repeat that, Your Honor?
Why exclude it? You know, this is a suppression motion. They're trying to keep this thing out. And the point Judge Cox is making is the whole purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter police misconduct. If you've got good faith conduct, and these guys aren't even police, then what is there to deter, and therefore what's the purpose of imposing the exclusionary rule?
Right. I would agree that the conduct of the NCOs was not grossly negligent, that they were acting in what they believed was their duty in their positions as the first sergeant and the supervisor to take care of their troops and make sure that he was okay. Why was he not paying his rent? How can I resolve this issue so that the landlord doesn't evict him from his apartment? And if there are no further questions, I will conclude.
Please.
The military judge did not abuse his discretion when he found that the NCO's entry into appellant's apartment was lawful, because the landlord had authority to consent to their entry following this court's decision in Jacobs. Even if this court finds the landlord did not have such authority, the NCO's entry was proper under the auspices of apparent authority. As the military judge's findings of fact were not erroneous and not based on erroneous view of the law, this court should uphold the ruling. Wherefore, the United States requests this honorable court uphold AFCA's decision and affirm the findings and sentence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will now hear counsel for the amicus.
Mr. Chief Judge, judges, and may it please the court, my name is Gari Natyal, and along with my supervising attorney, Mr. Robert Gifford, I represent the University of Oklahoma College of Law as amicus curiae in support of the United States. We urge this court to affirm the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals decision, finding that the military judge appropriately denied the defense motion to suppress the evidence located in Airman Irizarry's off-base apartment. Now, the motion to suppress was properly denied because the landlord had the requisite authority to consent to the NCO's presence in the apartment and enter into the apartment herself. Specifically, the entry into the apartment by all three persons did not violate the Fourth Amendment for two reasons. First, because Airman Irizarry assumed the risk that the landlord would enter and consent to the NCO's presence by signing the lease provision and triggering certain, the lease contract and triggering certain provisions through his conduct. And second, because the landlord had the requisite degree of authority to enter and consent to the NCO's presence in the leased premises.
Now, why'd they have that authority? What are you relying on in the lease for that authority?
In the lease, certainly, Your Honor, the landlord had the authority to initially enter the premises.
For any reason?
Under paragraph 13 of the lease, the landlord was permitted to enter when rent was delinquent and to subject all property to lien, or even under paragraph 28, there's a litany of reasons, including estimating repair and refurbishing costs, doing preventive maintenance.
Okay, and now, how do you go from the landlord to the sergeants, please?
Well, Your Honor, when the landlord had the appropriate amount of authority to be present in the leased premises, she was given a certain degree and scope of authority. And so, taken that in conjunction with the fact that Master Sergeant...
What was the scope of that authority?
That scope of authority was simply to carry out her administrative tasks. Now, had she herself started searching through his personal effects, certainly there would have been a violation of privacy interest. But she certainly had acted within the scope of her authority. And then we bring in Master Sergeant Sagansky and Tech Sergeant Zenner, who merely were there to assist in her administrative tasks.
Can I, I'm not sure where that's going. If the landlord has the authority to, it's based on the landlord's authority to enter, right?
Yes, sir.
Would it make a difference if the master sergeants were there to search for evidence under your argument?
Certainly, Your Honor, it would make a difference because the integrity of United States versus Jacobs really lies upon the fact that the flight chief in that case did not enter the apartment to search for criminal activity, but rather to assist the landlord in effectuating emergency repairs in that case. And here, the NCOs were present in the apartment to assist the CCA management in securing rent, getting the repairs taken care of, and simply locating just to see whether Airman Irizarry would return to the apartment for purposes of deeming the apartment abandoned or not. So they were there as assistants to the landlord, as substitutes in a certain sense, and they didn't, kind of go into the scope of being there for the express purpose for criminal investigation. So certainly had they gone into a criminal investigative authority, Chapman versus United States would be triggered, but that's not the case here.
Counsel, you noted that the landlord could enter the apartment under paragraph 13 if the tenant was delinquent in his rent. And if you read the language of paragraph 13, you're right that it says, let me find it here. If your rent is delinquent, our representative may peacefully enter the apartment and remove and or store the property subject to lien. But the title of that paragraph is removal after we exercise lien for rent. Had they exercised a lien for rent in this case?
Your Honor, I believe that the CCA management had chose not to exercise the lien for rent because, in fact...
So does that paragraph apply?
It still applies because it's not necessary for the landlord to conduct a type of ad hoc semantic type analysis of whether or not their conduct, even though they had the purpose of effectuating...
Isn't the landlord bound by the terms of the contract?
She is bound, and as long as you know, certain judges on this bench have noted that as long as there's a good faith agreement to the contract, that they have abided by the purpose, simply because they decided not to execute the lien, they decided to waive that portion, they shouldn't be...
But isn't under that paragraph, isn't the lien a prerequisite to going in and removing the property?
Your Honor, I would argue that prior to the initial entry by CCA management into the apartment, they certainly could have exercised that lien right, but they chose not to do so. But even waiving that right would not preclude them from entering in pursuant to their authority in paragraph 13.
Does the lien paragraph trigger the right of entry or merely trigger the right of seizing the property to settle the lien?
Your Honor, it would trigger the right of entry, certainly for the landlord. And
so Judge Erdman's question suggests that you can't go in under that paragraph unless you put the lien.
Correct.
So waiving the lien doesn't help you if that's the only way you can get in.
Perhaps.
They had been in several times before. This wasn't the first time they entered, was it?
Certainly, and the instance that we're concerned with here today falls more directly under paragraph 28, the portion that pertains to the various administrative tasks in terms of repair, removing perishable food items when electricity has been disconnected. So paragraph 13 pertains more in particular to the fact that their initial entry, in which they did realize there was a significant amount of damage, and that, yes, they needed assistance from Airman Irizarry's supervisors in the Air Force to help, you know, take care of the delinquent rent situation. And in fact, the CCA management here was simply acting out of the best interest out of everyone involved. She could have taken Airman Irizarry to civilian court, so was it but for his criminal activity, he would have been in an excellent place. And Master Sergeant Sagansky and Tech Sergeant Zenner were simply there, as has been stated, in the shoes of the landlord. They viewed the AVVI on the floor of the apartment from the lawful vantage point of the landlord, even though it was partially covered by an article of clothing that did not...
Counsel, if you, if this case were decided in a manner consistent with how you believe it should be decided by this court, how would you describe in plain English to a first sergeant in a military unit what principle of law they should adhere to and follow?
Your Honor, I would counsel that that supervisor may enter into an off-base leased apartment as long as they have the subjective and objective intent to only assist the landlord in certain administrative tasks. And even once they enter, they need to exhibit those that purpose in their actions as well. So whatever the landlord is authorized to do, assess damage, make certain repairs, remove perishable items, the supervisor is also permitted to do that. And this is pursuant to United States versus Jacobs.
And would you require them to seek legal counsel? Would you require them to review the requirements of the lease or simply rely on any landlord's assertion?
If given the opportunity, they should perhaps, this would be once again considering the fact that there has been unilateral contact from the landlord to the supervisor. So upon that initial contact, it would be counsel that perhaps, yes, the supervisors should get a hold of that lease to make sure that there is requisite authority. But in certain circumstances, that's not always the case.
Counsel, do you agree that your argument depends on the landlord having requisite authority under the lease?
Yes, Your Honor, but also in conjunction with the fact that Airman Irizarry did have a significantly diminished expectation of privacy in the premises.
But in terms of the advice that you would give or the rule that you would craft, it would depend on the actual requisite authority of the landlord.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the government suggested that we rely on Matlock and that the landlord had sufficient relationship with the property under Matlock to have actual authority to allow them to enter. Do you agree with that argument by the government?
Yes, Your Honor, I do agree with that argument. But taking Matlock even one step further to, as this court noted in United States versus Jacobs, is the degree of authority that the Supreme Court granted to the landlords in Matlock or a third party in Matlock is slightly different than that which is given to landlords in the United States versus Jacobs context and this context. Here, it's a lesser degree of authority because the landlord was not permitting the NCOs for the express purpose of criminal investigation, but solely for the purpose in assisting her in her tasks. So it is a type of common authority, but it's kind of a different animal here. It's a lesser degree than is required for the purpose of bringing in a police for a warrantless Fourth Amendment search.
Appellant had a diminished right of privacy because of the paragraph 28 or for some other reason?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why did appellant have a diminished expectation of privacy? Is that based on the lease or some other concept?
It's based on the lease as well as his conduct. So here he had signed the lease.
What about the spouse then? So she has no protection based on his conduct, meaning trash in the apartment?
Well, because they were both joint tenants of the apartment and they had both knowingly signed that lease and they had assumed the risk that, yes, in certain circumstances, the landlord does have authority to enter.
So the diminished expectation is derivative of the lease. Is that clear?
Yes.
I'm asking. I want to make sure I'm not missing the argument.
Excuse me. It is derivative of the lease, but further, there needs to be certain types of conduct by the tenant himself. And in this case, he failed to pay rent for over 45 days, neglected to pay his utilities, He avoided many communications attempts by CCA. So in essence, he began to move down the spectrum of expectation of privacy towards the point where he was significantly diminishing that expectation.
Thank you, Counselor. Are there any further questions from up here? All right, thank you very much for your argument. Rebuttal, please.
Counsel, before you get into your rebuttal argument, I'd just like to ask you a question about the lease. As I understand it, you've said that paragraph 13 requires an actual lien to have been filed before it triggers the right of entry. Is that correct?
Well, to have been exercised, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And under, as I understand it, you say that under paragraph 28, only the specific things listed in paragraph 28 are authorized reasons for the landlord to enter.
Yes, Your Honor, or for the landlord to authorize another person to enter.
Right. So is it your position that absent a lien, that a landlord faced with a tenant who has not paid rent for 45 days and against whom the electricity is about to be turned off may not enter the apartment to see what is going on or inspect for damages unless they bring a repair person with them or something of that nature?
That is
absent a lien.
Right, that isn't our position, Your Honor, because the lease would have allowed them to go into the apartment for the purpose of posting a notice on the inside of the door, Your Honor, in that delinquent rent situation. So the lease not only authorizes them entry, it actually contemplates entry. And so anything that they could see once they entered the apartment for that purpose, for example, if they saw an immediate threat to the to property, they could deal with that through another provision in the lease. Now, in this case, it's interesting that the first sighting of the feces was on the 15th of February. The apartment chose not to do anything about it until the 23rd of February. So Mr. Marquette had seen the feces. He chose to leave them there. And so it's apparent that the apartment neither viewed this as an emergency situation, nor did the apartment view this as a situation where there was a need for immediate protection of the property, because, in fact, they didn't immediately protect the property. This was an instance where they were trying to assert pressure on the tenant through the Air Force to get their money. And, Your Honor, that on the 23rd of February, when Mr. Marquette allowed the entry of the two NCOs, he was a trespasser and the two NCOs were trespassers, because he didn't go into that apartment on that day for any purpose that's recognized. I'd like to quickly return to Judge Stuckey's conversation with the government about the plain view issue. And important in this analysis is Joint Appendix at 85 of the statement of Master Sergeant Sagansky, where he says that he discovered on the floor an aircraft flight instrument. I asked Technical Sergeant Zenner to photograph it where it lay. And then I had a closer inspection of the piece to see if I could determine if it was government property. So he did not recognize it as government property. He had to have further analysis. And then he said, when I picked up the item, I found an identification tag on the rear and the government markings and the serial number. And the same point is also addressed by the military judge at Joint Appendix page 215, when he says, after entering an interior room of the apartment, Sergeant Sagansky noticed a partially covered piece of equipment that appeared to be an aircraft part. He removed a cloth that was partially covering the item, and Sergeant Sagansky recognized the item as an AVVI. Your Honor, I see I'm out of time.
Could you just point me to the paragraph in the lease that allows them to... that contemplates entry for the purposes of posting a notice without more?
Your Honor, I thought that was on, I might be mistaken, I thought that was actually in paragraph 28, but it might have been a separate.
Okay, but that has an and after it.
My all I can tell you, Your Honor, is my recollection is that was 28. I might be misremembering.
Okay. Counsel, is it any paragraph in the lease that authorizes the landlord to call in the sergeants?
No, Your Honor. Judge Cox, on the contrary, the lease limited, it actually uses the term admit government representatives for the limited purpose of ensuring compliance with safety and housing ordinances, which one, we know that under Texas law, they apply the principle expressio unius, that's exclusio ulterioris in the construction of contracts. Two, it used the term limited purpose, and three, this reminds me of Chief Judge Everett's dissent from Jacobs, where he says, look, under posse comitatus, the government, the Air Force agents, can't have a role in enforcing state law. So these two NCOs had no role in enforcing any Texas or Abilene ordinance dealing with those issues, Your Honor.
And one other completely unrelated question. My law clerk and I were discussing, wonder what happened to the animals. And I don't have the whole record. Is there any testimony about that?
Your Honor, there isn't. The only indication is that by the time Mr. Marquette made his first entry on the 15th, there were still animal feces there, but there were no animals there, Your Honor.
Before you sit down, in 30 seconds or less, could you please respond to the questions regarding the exclusionary rule and why it should or should not apply in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. It should apply under Military Rule of Evidence 311. Regardless of what limitations that the Supreme Court has placed on the exclusionary rule, the President has adopted an exclusionary rule, and under 311A, the President has provided that where evidence is obtained through an illegal search and seizure, that evidence will not be admitted at a court-martial. And so that restriction, regardless of whether the President, you know, under the sort of ratchet theory, the President is free to adopt a more restrictive rule than the constitutionally applicable Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule. The Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule would apply if the President adopted a lesser rule, but the President is free to have a more restrictive rule. To the extent that 311A is more restrictive than Supreme Court case law, 311A applies and does not allow this evidence to come into a court martial, Chief Judge Baker.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties and amicus. Thank you very much. And we will now recess the court until further order of the court. But after we do that, we're going to then stay in place and we'll proceed to answer any questions you all might have about the court, military justice, period, with the exception of no questions about the case and no hidden questions about the case. No, you know, no fake hints there. Fair enough? Please.